weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Connor Bean for the Bank Holiday Afternoon Entertainment. It is Monday, May 6th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and 7pm, Katie Kirk reflects on record-breaking performances from the Irish relay teams at the World Championships in the Bahamas. Alan Colley reviews a bumper weekend of Premier League and League of Ireland action. And we'll keep you up to date with the ongoing League of Ireland matches this evening. Keane Tracy joins us fresh from Leinster's Croke Park triumph over Northampton. Noel Moran chats hurling while former Galway captain Gary O'Donnell tells us what provincial success will do for the tribesmen. We'll also wrap up today's news headlines, so if you want to have your say on any of that or whatever else besides, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 0871879200, or we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. I sincerely hope you are still enjoying your bank holiday weekend. The weekend is not over just yet. Keane Tracy is alongside me. Before I say hello to Keane, though, a couple of news headlines. Eddie Dunbar is out of the Giro d'Italia due to injuries picked up in a crash in a second stage. Dunbar showed his bravery in riding out the final 63 kilometres to be just under 6 minutes down on stage winner and race leader Tadej Pogačar. However, the decision has been made to opt out of today's third stage due to the injury sustained yesterday. And snooker, as Alan Colley walks into the building, Kyron Wilson repelled a determined effort from Jack Jones to conserve his 5-frame lead after the penultimate session of the World Snooker Championship final in Sheffield. Twice the qualifier, who had lost the first 7 frames of the match, hauled back the deficit to 3, but on each occasion Wilson responded and ended the afternoon 3 frames away from the title at 15-10. Before we cross to John Kenny, Keane Tracy is here. Alan Colley has just walked in the building. Weekend sporting highlights. I suppose I did mention the snooker there, so just if I pivot to Alan Colley very briefly, and are you enjoying the world final at the moment?
I'm not, to be honest.
No, with you. Oh,
I'm not.
Why not?
Well, it's just the fact that I suppose. And I am a bit of a snooker connoisseur, shall we say.
Hence why I teed you up. So, I've already introduced Keane, but I've bypassed
him. So it doesn't really bother me in the sense that, you know, obviously unheralded players get into a final. I've no problem with that, but I just think this one, it's just not whetting the appetite that you'd want. Now I'll watch it to see.
High standards, Alan Colley.
It's a pity Jones didn't get back. Like, he's fought back well today, but he was just almost kind of overwhelmed by the whole occasion, I think, yesterday in the early stages, the first session, and to lose 7-1, it's very difficult to come back from that. Now, in fairness, he came out and fought today, and he got it back to within 3 a couple of times, as you said there, but 5 is too big of a gap now. And to be fair to Wilson, he's playing very well, and if he goes on to win it, he probably does deserve it overall. He's been very, very good. But my highlight, Shane, is a funny one, away from soccer as well.
Okay, here we go, Keane.
We were here a couple of weeks back, and we came to the Monday night, and then we had obviously the GAA chat, but I was in Markovic Park watching Sligo and Galway were atrocious, and Pádraig Joyce was almost felt like he was hanging on by his fingertips, really, and even listening to some of the fans that were beside me were suggesting the same. To turn around in 2 weeks and win a Connacht final, and that's his third in a row, and also to leave out your star player, Shane Walsh, big, big call, and he was brave enough to do that, even the fact that he was under pressure. And I loved Pádraig Joyce as a player. He was a brilliant, brilliant player to watch, but as a manager as well, to do what he's after doing, not only obviously in the last couple of weeks, but over the last kind of 3 or 4 years, and to win 3 Connacht titles, and to flip it around because they were atrocious against Sligo. Sligo should have beat them, and to go and beat Mayo in the manner that they did yesterday, I think he deserves a big mention.
Alan Colley with a Gaelic football.
I'm a man.
Moment of his head.
And not a traditionalist Gaelic football man having that as
That's fair.
Speaking of Gaelic football, Keane Tracy in Croke Park, you watched a rugby match at the weekend.
That was nice, Shane. Yeah. Well done.
Was that your sporting highlight?
It was, and it might seem a bit boring and on brand and all that, but 82,300 people, it was a record for a Champions Cup game, and it was an incredible occasion. It was an incredible occasion, I think, for obviously for Leinster, but for Irish sport as well, to get to showcase Croke Park and all that it has to offer, particularly for people like me You know, I was saying to you, Shane, off air, to my shame, I haven't been to too many what I would class as big occasions in Croke Park. The biggest, ironically or not ironically, whatever the case may be, was Munster and Leinster in 2009. Like, I've never been to an All-Ireland final. I really want to tick that box.
He's a one-trick pony. All he's mentioning is rugby.
I need to tick the All-Ireland box this year. So for someone who doesn't get to enjoy Croke Park, this is my point on the biggest days. It was amazing at the weekend. Absolutely amazing. It was only a couple of thousand Northampton fans, to be fair. They made themselves heard at times. But yeah, for Leinster to showcase what is the best stadium in the country for more people, it made you wonder and made you think why Croke Park isn't used for Six Nations games, because there's no doubt that they could fill it for the big one. So that was certainly my sporting knowledge.
Well, there will be more matches next year for Leinster fans.
It did look fantastic, didn't it, in fairness? And I have a bit of a fear now, Cian, and you're in a good place probably to answer this. With the problems Irish football have faced over the last number of years, and right now at this moment in time, how bad things are, rugby is just getting bigger and bigger and taking over, like.
Yeah, well, like...
Which must be a concern for soccer people in terms of the success Leinster have in Ireland. Like, young kids are only wanting to follow that path.
Isn't it like everything though, Alan? Like, young kids are impressionable, and when they see, you know, teams winning, like we've discussed this in the show before in Limerick, that, you know, rugby probably took a bit of a hit over the last few years because lots of kids wanted to play hurling on the back of the hurlers' success. Whereas now, you know, Munster obviously got to win the URC last season, and you're right, rugby is on a massive upward curve, I would say. And you look at how well Ireland have been performing by and large on the world stage, winning the Six Nations again this year. So it's no surprise, and obviously then football is in like dire straits, you'd have to say.
Yeah, it is, you're right.
National team falling further and further behind, the governance and everything that's going on in the FAI, it just wouldn't really attract you to the sport, would it?
Well, that's as I said, that's why I'm so worried about it.
Because I say that as a big football fan.
And that's not me trying to take away from the rugby success either. It's brilliant to see what they're doing, and good luck to them. Yeah. They've been phenomenal, Leinster, Irish team. I'm an admirer of Andy Farrell, all that stuff. But just, I'm kind of looking at my own game, thinking, like, we're in trouble here, like major trouble. And I don't think people realise just the trouble we're in.
It is worrying. John Kenny is at Tallaght Stadium, where Shamrock Rovers are in trouble.
They are. Well, not trouble. I mean, we're only 3 minutes in the second half, and it's Waterford who lead here. 2-1. Rovers almost equalised there from a free kick where Sean Sargent in the Waterford goal has just pushed one over, and the corner has just been headed over their own crossbar. Great bank holiday fair here. It's the full series of games. Earlier on today, you may have heard Drogheda beat Dundalk by 2-1, but 2-1 at halftime here. The first goal in the second minute, a Dean McAvaney corner, wasn't dealt with by the Rovers goalkeeper, Leon Pulis. He really was at fault. He dropped the ball. Looked like it was over the line, but the defender added to that by smashing it to the roof of the net. And it looks like a Pulis own goal. Rovers almost equalised from the kickoff. Trevor Clark blazing over as Sean Kavanagh cross close in. But on the eighth minute, it was 1-1. Rovers equalised. Johnny Kenny hit a shot. Blues keeper Sam Sargent saved it well, but Kenny scored from the loose ball to make it 1-1. But on 17 minutes, a cracking goal. Pádraig Gammon's shot blocked on the edge of the area. It fell straight to Dean McMenemy, who had the presence of mind to tee it up, and from 30 yards out, a real grass cutter into the bottom corner to make it 2-1 at halftime. This is great bank holiday fair. The other games kicking off at 5 o'clock. Bosnale Galway 1, Morris Nugent after 19 minutes. Sligo leads St. Pat's by a goal to nil. Ellis Chapman on 23, and it's Derry against Shells at 7:45. But here, we've got 5 minutes gone in the second half. It's a really good game. I'm expecting more goals. Rovers 1, Waterford 2.
John Kenny, thank you very much. Reporting live from Tallaght Stadium. Alan, before we get on to our main rugby chat, Drogheda 2, Dundalk 1. Plenty of drama in the dying embers of the Louth Derby.
I watched it, Shane. It was probably the most enjoyable game I've watched all season. Obviously, it's a big derby, but both teams are languishing near the bottom of the table. Dundalk on the bottom, Drogheda second from bottom. So it was a huge game in that regards, not just with the bragging rights at stake, but it was brilliant, full of entertainment. Probably not the best quality, but typical blood and guts and thunder derby that you would expect. Couple of sendings off, but Drogheda, after falling down to 10 men, you're thinking Dundalk are going to press on now and get the winner, because they got a lucky enough goal actually from the resulting free kick where the Drogheda goalkeeper got sent off, and at 1-1 with 20 minutes to go, you're thinking they're the ones that's going to go on and get the winner. But Drogheda popped up in injury time, and there was 10 minutes of injury time played, and got the winning goal, and there was great scenes. It was a really, really enjoyable game, I have to say, and a massive result more importantly.
Very much so. Drogheda on 14 points. They were level with Sligo Rovers, but if Sligo were to go on to defeat Pats, Sligo would move on to 17 points, but a big result at the bottom of the table. And anyone questioning Dundalk owners' passion, Sean O'Connor, Irish Independent journalist, tweeted, "Bit of a surreal moment in Drogheda as Dundalk owner Brian Ainscough appeared to be rowing with a couple of home supporters for a minute. Drogheda Stewart had to tell Ainscough to calm down, who held his hand up to apologise. Never seen anything like that."
But, and the whole management thing is bizarre as well, because Brian Garland is still standing on the line being the manager and Noel King is sitting in the dugout. I don't get it.
Wild stuff, but a wild, loud derby, and we will be getting into all of the League of Ireland matches, all the results, as JK reported. Rovers still trailing at home 2-1. Morris Nugent has Galway in front 1-0. Sligo lead Pats 1-0. And in the First Division, Cork City leaders are drawing with Wexford United. UCD and Cove is 1-1 as well, UCD in second. Elsewhere, Bray have a 1-0 lead over Finn Harps, and Longford Town defeating Kerry 2-0, while Treaty United are losing at home to Athlone Town by 1-0.
Game on.
Rugby.
So, Keane Tracy, to continue our conversation somewhat about rugby and Leinster and Croke Park. The drive for five is still alive, but Leinster's place in the Champions Cup final went right down to the last breath, eventually defeating Northampton 20 points to 17. So my question to you, will the fact that they were able to resiliently see out the win stand to them going forward, or is it more of a concern that from a very promising position they found themselves scrambling late on?
I think it's a bit of both, really, to be honest, Shane. They never should have found themselves in that position, and that's not to do any disservice to Northampton, who showed serious guts and determination to get back into the game. Now, look, they are top of the Premiership for a reason, but Leinster were just so dominant in that first half, and then to score a try so early after, so soon after half-time, you were thinking that was curtains. And look, we should focus on the positives first before we get to kind of, you know, what it means for Leinster in terms of allowing the lead slip. They were seriously impressive for, I would say, 43 minutes of that game. Obviously, a game lasts 80 minutes and they're going to need to play a hell of a lot longer in the final against Toulouse. But for those 43 minutes, they were awesome. Their power in the contact, like, they were just getting over the gain line. It seemed like every time they were making carries, Josh van der Fleer, Joe McCarthy were all absolutely excellent. Caelan Doris, the same. They scored, James Lowe scored a really good hat-trick. I mean, he probably won't get to score an easier hat-trick in terms of the finishes that he had, but the way they were created, particularly two of them by James and Gibson Park, who was just immense, really. I think Leinster becoming, as well as Gibson Park is playing, I think they're becoming increasingly reliant on him, because if you take Gibson Park out of that team, I think Leinster's attack is in a worrying place, if I'm being honest. Gibson Park provides so much of the spark, whereas in the last few years it's been, you know, everything kind of ran through Johnny Sexton. I think we've kind of seen a bit of a shift now.
Is that since Johnny's left that Jemson has stepped up and been that focal point?
Look, Gibson Park and Johnny Sexton were an outstanding halfback partnership, they really were, but Sexton was obviously the alpha in that, and he was the one who drove everything. But I think we've seen it a few times, particularly when Ross Byrne wasn't playing earlier this season, when he was injured and Gibson Park was there, that you can see he's taken a lot more of the responsibility. He seems to be, I'm not going to say he was hampered in any way by Johnny Sexton, it'd be a ludicrous thing to say, but he seems to be playing with a little bit more freedom as well, and Leinster are reaping the rewards. And like I said, if you were to take him out of that team, I think he's become arguably Leinster's most important player, really. I think it was telling that Leinster didn't bring Luke McGrath off the bench at the weekend. That is how important Gibson Park has become to him. So for 43 minutes, they were excellent. And then Ross Byrne misses the conversion, a tricky enough kick for James Lowe's third try. Leinster go to the bench and make three changes. And they've been criticised for the past for not using their bench often enough. But I felt like they went to the bench a little bit early, if I'm honest. It almost felt like it was a predetermined thing to bring Jack Cohn and Ronan Kelleher and Jason Jenkins on at the same time. But I would argue that Dan Sheehan was having an excellent game, and Josh van der Fleer was, along with Gibson Park, arguably Leinster's best player on the day. So when they brought on the changes, they seemed to go to a more kick-heavy approach, which isn't usually Leinster's game. They were happy enough to give the ball back to Northampton and invite pressure on, which is a dangerous game to play, particularly against a side as with a good as attack as Northampton do, and as good on transition as they are. And my view on it, and Leinster supporters might disagree, my view on it was that the change in tactics actually made sense, but I just felt like they did it a little bit too early. The game wasn't quite dead and buried at 23 up. I think there was at least one more try there for Leinster if they've kept their foot on the pedal, but they took it off and they allowed Northampton a way back into the game. And I think when they reflect on it, Leo Cullen will be more annoyed, I think, by their execution of the shift in tactics rather than the shift in tactics themselves, if that makes sense. Because, like, I was thinking back to the criticism, the unfair criticism, I would say, that Conor Murray got during the Six Nations when Ireland lost to England in the end game. Remember when he kicked the ball away and he got heavily criticised for not keeping the ball? Whereas I think Leinster showed the risks that are attached in trying to play a little bit too much, because the break that allowed Northampton one last roll of the dice came from not protecting the breakdown when Courtney Laws scragged Gibson Park at the base. Now, that was after 17 phases with still 3 minutes left on the clock. And Leinster then ended up needing a Caelan Doris and a Jack Conan. Unbelievable turnover that was full of skill and courage, because if they get that wrong there and Reynal, the referee, penalises Leinster, it's a handy 3 points for Finn Smith, who kicked like a dream all day, and suddenly you're looking at extra time. So I think Leinster would be frustrated, Shane, that they didn't adapt better to their own sort of changing of the game plan, but also they compounded their errors. Their line-out, they lost a couple of line-outs. They conceded 5 of their 9 penalties in that second half in a 27-minute spell, and that's something that you don't really usually associate with Leinster, but I think we have to give credit to Northampton as well.
Very much so. Before we continue our conversation here, Cian, there has been a goal at Tallaght Stadium, but to who, John Kenny?
Waterford, would you believe? It's in the 57th minute. Shamrock Rovers 1, Waterford 3. This present incarnation of Waterford have never beaten Shamrock Rovers' first team. Led 2-1 at half-time, but in the 54th minute, what a goal. Asamoah's shot originally was saved by Leon Poulos, diving away to his left-hand side, but it fell for Connor Parsons, their number 10, who hit it first time and veered the underside of the crossbar. It crashed into the back of the net, and off he peeled to celebrate with the decent blue supporters who are here today. They're in seventh. Shamrock Rovers in second can go top tonight if they win, but they're 3-1 down, and Stephen Bradley has responded to that by bringing on Neil Ferrugia and the ex-Irish international Jack Burns. Can they rescue it here? It's 57 minutes in. It's Shamrock Rovers 1, Waterford 3.
So great news for Waterford fans, not so much for Shamrock Rovers fans. We will keep you updated on that one. There's been a red card at Dalyman Park. Galway United lead Bohemians 1-0, but the red card has gone the way of Galway United. So Galway down to 10 men with 30 or so minutes left to play in that one. Cian Tracy, where were we? We're nearly going to get on to Leinster's concerns, I suppose, after all the positives that you were explaining there so elegantly.
I think they'll be concerned that, again, for most of the game, their defence was awesome and it dominated Northampton, particularly in the collision area. But Northampton did get around their blitz offence on several occasions, and if you think back to just before half time when they brilliantly beat the blitz on the outside and they don't throw the final pass to hand, if that's a try, that's a very different game going in at half time. Both of their tries came from Leicester's right flank, where Northampton threw two lovely passes over the top to beat the blitz as well. So, look, Leinster's defence is still very much in transition. It was a statement performance in terms of what they did against La Rochelle in the quarter-final, but I think there were a few concerning signs there again at the weekend. Now, Northampton's attack is excellent, but again, if we're talking about this through the lens of the final against the Toulouse side, who you would argue their attack is even better, particularly when you have Anton Dupont running the show, then they are concerned. Leinster are going to have to seriously tighten up. It's a real risk and reward type of approach that they're playing, and when they get it right, it's brilliant, but it is vulnerable at the same time.
We will be previewing that final in due course in detail, but broadly speaking, how much will Leinster need to improve for a Champions Cup final against Toulouse?
Yeah, I think they'll feel themselves, Shane, like they have to improve massively. There's no doubt about it. I mean, they should, like we touched on there, they shouldn't have been in the situation that they are, and I think that will give Toulouse confidence. But weirdly enough, the Toulouse semi-final against Harlequins was actually very similar as well, because Leinster went 17 points up in that 43rd minute. Toulouse were 19 points ahead before Harlequins looked like reeling them in. So there are plenty of parallels between the two semi-finals. But yeah, for sure, Leinster are going to have to be better. I think they didn't get probably enough punch from their bench. It was interesting that they went away from the 6-2 split. I thought they would go for the 6-2. I think they could really do with Hugo Keenan. It's a pretty obvious thing to say, but as well as someone like Kieran Frawley has done, I think Leinster are lacking a bit of pace in that back three. It was good to see Jimmy O'Brien making his return at the end of the game from injury as well. Gary Ringrose, it sounds like, might be back this weekend against the Ospreys. I think Jamie Osborne has done excellently in deputising for him, but there's no doubt that Ringrose and Henshaw are Leinster's first choice partnership. And then similarly, I think they could really do with James Ryan getting back for that final as well, because the more of these players you can get back into the team, Shane, obviously then it has a knock-on effect for what you can do on the bench. And Leinster's bench in the La Rochelle game was one of the big reasons why they were able to win the game, but they just didn't get that same impact from it at the weekend. So that will be a bit of a cause for concern, but if they can get those key guys back fit, then it's going to be a massive boost.
Okay, great stuff. Keen Tracy, thank you very much for popping into studio. We are taking a short break. Alan Colley is still with us to chat football a little bit later on, but Gaelic Games is up next. Katie Kirk will be with us as well on Athletics, but just to keep you updated with those ongoing League of Ireland matches, it is Shamrock Rovers 1, Waterford 3, Bohemians 0, Galway United 1, and Sligo Rovers lead St. Patrick's Athletic by a goal to nil. Stay with us here on a bank holiday special. Game on 2FM.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Now, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to Gaelic football. I'm delighted to say that former Galway captain Gary O'Donnell joins us on the line now. I imagine, Gary, you're a very happy man at the moment.
Yeah, for sure, Shane. Great day yesterday, great occasion. You know, the weather played a big role in it too. There was a big crowd in Salt Hill, and great to come out the right side of the result, in fairness.
Yeah, how proud were you as a Galway man to see that never say die attitude from the players yesterday, the manner of that victory?
Hugely, in fairness, like even talking to people in the lead up to the game, like the one thing that I was looking for and just wanted was just for a performance mainly, and something for the Galway supporters to shout at. Like, I remember I was in the game last year, the knockout stage, and you know, it was a small bit underwhelming in the fact that I know they were struggling with injuries and form at the time, but the manner in which they got bit by Mayo at the time and yesterday was the complete opposite. Like, there was just so much to kind of get you off your seat and so much to get behind, and you know, particularly at the end as well too, it was just a brilliant finish to the game.
Pádraic Joyce after the match said, "It means an awful lot to me personally. It means a lot to the players, more so because of the stick we have got all year. It's been a troublesome year for us. Our backs have been to the wall since January with injuries and a bit of form. But one thing I've always said about these players is I'd never, ever question the character in them." What will this win do for this current group of players?
Well, you'd hope it'll give them a lot of confidence. Like, I suppose it's been well noted in the media, like the players and injuries that they've had and they've been missing. So, you know, they had a good bunch of them back yesterday. Even Killian McDade was on the bench. Like, that was a huge addition. And, you know, those guys get a few minutes into them as well over the next few weeks. You know, you're really looking at an opportunity that you could be looking at their form of a couple of years ago as well, where things could just open up nicely for them. Now, in saying that, like, they do have Derry in a few weeks' time. I suppose the big thing about yesterday was just, as I said to you, the confidence. Mayo would have really wanted to win that as well. You know, doing three in a row hasn't been done since the early 80s. You know, coming from a situation where the game looked like it was going to be dead as well, and players coming back from injuries, you'd imagine it's just going to be a huge springboard for them now over the next few weeks as well. And I imagine they're going to be very confident skipping into training during the week.
Yeah. This group, with Comer starting for the first time, you mentioned McDade returning to the 26. Shane Welsh kicked 3 points off the bench, and then, you know, Sean Kelly plays an entire game, who's had his injury issues. Does it feel like it's coming together now, and Galway, they're really only starting now?
Well, it's hard to say, I suppose. Like, it's amazing what a day makes or a game makes. You know, the perception yesterday would have been that if Galway lost that game, you know, it would have been very much doom and gloom. But, you know, one game, as always, they can always change things very quickly. And I thought, in fairness, the team selection, I remember when the team was selected on Thursday, looked well. And then coming into the game at the stadium, the rumours were going around that, you know, Shane wasn't starting and there was a few other changes being made. And in fairness, I thought the game plan was spot on in terms of, I think they just managed to, or the plan probably was just to keep in the game as long as possible and then to unleash the big guns later in the game with Matty Tierney and Shane coming in, and even Daniel Rafferty had a big impact when he came in. John Maher had a huge impact when he came in. You know, all had big contributions, you know, when the game was in the balance. And, you know, management deserve huge credit for that, I thought. Shane, as the game opened up, you know, kicked his 3 points. Damo was just brilliant all day long, like, you know, contributed 2 points from play, but was so influential in other scores. And then Rob Finnerty was probably his best game in years for Galway. He kicked 8 points, I think, and 5 from frees. He was just superb. He, you know, he fed off the kind of the presence that Damo had inside, where he attracted so many defenders and, you know, brought him back into it. I suppose a lot of it was kind of the old guard. Johnny Heaney was influential as well, and a few others. Paul had a fine game midfield as well. So kind of like that, the old guard kind of came to the fore again, as well as, you know, Johnny McGrath, who was outstanding cornerback as well, and Jacqueline the other side. They really did well to kind of help Ryan O'Donoghue and Tommy Conroy to just a few scores. So a lot of positives all around, to be fair.
A lot of positives for Galway, and then a lot of frustration, a lot of disappointment from Mayo. How will they regroup from this loss, do you think?
It'll be a tough one for them, no doubt. Like, you know, whatever team was going to lose yesterday, as I said to you, they were kind of on a knife edge, both of them coming in terms of the winner would take a lot from it in terms of the cup and playing against your arch rivals, and then moving on into the championship, and the losers were definitely going to have a disappointing few weeks. But look, at the championship only really gets going now. That's the reality of it. I saw an interesting stat actually leading into it, which was I think Mayo had won the last four games between the teams that were knockout, and Galway had won the last four that had a safety net. Now that's five after yesterday, so it was 50-50 on both of them. I just thought that was an interesting enough one. But you know, Mayo's group now, look, at it should be relatively straightforward enough for them to get out of it. Wherever they come in it, I don't know. But as I said to you, the championship only gets going now, so I'm sure they'll be able to, you know, regroup and go again.
Yeah, very much so. Mayo were patchy, you know, it kind of, even in that second half, Galway, I think, 3 unanswered scores, then Mayo reply with 4 in the bounds. Why couldn't Mayo play more? What did Galway do to get over the line, to get in their faces?
Well, as I said, yeah, Mayo's performance was patchy. Galway was at times as well, but Galway just finished so strong, I thought. You know, as I said to the game plan of just staying in the game and having Mayo within touching distance on the stretch and unleashing the big guns, I think just was the plan. It worked a treat. But I suppose Mayo, I think there were 2 or 3 points up there with a few minutes to go. There was a key moment, I thought, when Tommy Conroy got the foot in front of John Maher. There was a free, and that was a huge call. Kind of played into Galway's hands of fairness, but then, you know, the last few minutes ebbed and flowed as well. And I think it was alluded to in the post-match interviews as well about Mayo not being able to push on 4 or 5 in front. But I just think, in fairness, Galway really defended really well at the back. I think they stifled their two main threats in Tommy Conroy and Ryan Dunne very, very well. I think they deserve huge credit for that. So just probably battled well and showed great character to stay in the game. And as I said to you, their big guns kind of saw them through near the end to win the game for them.
Yeah, listen, before I pick your brain on Kerry Clare, I do have to mention the man of the moment, Conor Gleeson, because, you know, when Pádraig Joyce is saying after that, he gets so much unfair criticism in the county about kickouts and whatnot, but an absolutely a man of steel there at the end, ice in the brain. And to also mention, of course, I think Maurice Brosnan had the article that Conor's grandmother passed away the weekend before. He was said that he could take time off training, but he still came down. He put in the hard yards. To have the right mindset to concentrate fully in the heat of the moment is just so commendable for Conor.
Hugely, in fairness. And, you know, look, a lot of inter-county players and Galway are probably the worst for it in terms of getting the most stick, probably unfair times as well, too. A lot of the players get it. And, you know, in fairness, like, to pop up near the end of the game there, considering the scrutiny he would have been under and, you know, the game that was in it, and to slot those two free kicks like that, especially when he hasn't been really doing it over the last few years. He hasn't been taking those frees. It would have been either Shane or maybe Matty Tierney or someone like that. For him to just slot in there this week and to take the opportunity they did, like, he deserves a huge credit for that, and fair play to him, in fairness. You know, as you said there, he probably has been getting bits and pieces of criticism, but so have other players. And as I said to you, a lot of them stood up yesterday. It is only one game, and they'll know that themselves, I'm sure, when they get back to train this week. It'll be all about refocusing and driving on now for the championship. But yeah, great week for them, and especially with the loss of his grandmother as well. I didn't even actually know that till the end of the game, but shows great character and shows the stature of the man to do that.
Oh, it most certainly does. For Jack O'Connor and Kerry, plenty to ponder despite a comfortable win in Ennis.
Yeah, look, at a game like that, I suppose, for Kerry, it's kind of a, I don't know, it's nearly like a lose-lose situation. They kicked 23 points, which is superb scoring. Like, you know, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. They're clear or no, you know, pushovers either. Like, you know, they still bet them by 7 points and people are still kind of picking holes in their performance and so on. You know, Kerry will know themselves, even so, in the manner in which Paddy Clifford lifted the trophy yesterday. I think they just want to get it out of the way and move on. And as I said, to get to the business end of the championship. But, you know, I think, in fairness to Kerry, lots of positives for them. Yes, you could pick holes in terms of they probably got Kerry or Clare ran through the middle of them quite easy at times. But, you know, they'll know them. They'll be kind of quietly confident and happy the way things are going, where people are kind of half writing them off and so on. And they'll be working on their game plan for the bigger games ahead.
Championship is only starting now. Group stages to come for now. Gary O'Donnell, former Galway captain, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, Niall Moran joins me on the line to discuss a great weekend of hurling. Two big matches, one in Munster, one in Leinster. There were a couple of John McDonagh clashes as well, but let us focus on Waterford Tipperary first and foremost. Niall, was a draw a fair result on the balance of play, in your opinion?
A pulsating game from start to finish. A draw, to be honest, is subjective. I personally thought Tipperary were probably the better team for longer patches, only that they let Waterford slip back into it with goals. Yet, for, I suppose, to read the narrative of other people, they might think differently. But I suppose one thing was it was a throwback to old championship kind of survival. Both of these teams really, really give it everything. Look, in the first half, some of the hurling mightn't have been the prettiest, but I think that was down to the sheer intensity of the tackling that was going on. And obviously a little bit of nerves too, because there was no flat riding on it for... Do you know what I mean? To be honest, Shane, it was actually more than even the result. In both cases, and particularly in Tipperary's case, I think it was their personality, their character was called into question. And like, I suppose, even I know myself, there happened to be in Nina during the week and I was doing a bit of business, and the first question that would come is, well, what do you think of Sunday? And I suppose at this stage, you're kind of an experienced person. When somebody asks you that, it's a loaded question. So the easiest thing to do is ask them, well, what do you think of Sunday? And lo and behold, within 10 seconds, you had guys being called cowards, you had guys being called this, that, and the other. And like, again, look, people, they care about it in Tipperary and they care about it in all the counties. But like, when you see guys' character being assassinated, yeah, like in Tipperary's case, they were poor against Limerick, I suppose. Took for 45 minutes to win the game. It was after the goal that they probably showed a very lack of fight. So I suppose I don't feel that you should be questioning the kind of characters that people are, but if it was in question going into the match, then they answered all the critics, because they got a couple of sucker punches right the way throughout it that could have buried them. Like, to be fair, like, James Owens gave them nothing. He really, really gave them nothing. And even there was one little cameo, Kyle Barrett got absolutely creased. Johnny even probably got creased twice in the one play, and there was no free given for it. And Liam Cahill, they could have had all the excuses they wanted, and they would have been well deserving on Saturday night to come out with the excuses, but 4 points down and they still kept plugging. And do you know what, they deserve that. And John, that's not easy for Limerick man to say the Tip deserves something, but they did deserve it. And I'm glad for them, and I'm glad for the Munster Championship too, that it's, because it's really kind of given it another element of a lifeline. And look, depending on the result below between Limerick and Cork next weekend, the whole thing could be wide open again after it. But for Tipperary, look, like, again, it's just the character that they showed, the fight, they deserve to win it. Hurling-wise, skill-wise, they're still at a bit of where they need to go. But I suppose when you're looking for form and looking for confidence, then fight is the number one criteria, and they came with that. And I suppose that confidence and that flow that you'd ordinarily associate with Tipperary, that may come against Cork in a couple of weeks' time. So look, it was a really entertaining game. Waterford, again, they'll be wicked disappointed to lose that 4-point lead. And do you know what I mean? I suppose it could be something that they'll live to regret in the weeks to come, because there is a couple of more twists and turns in this championship yet. And like, when you have your foot on the neck of a team at this level, you have to finish them off. And look, they're a little bit green coming down the home stretch. Like, Jake Morris should have been ploughed into the stand in Walsh Park, and he wasn't. He was let go through, got a shot away. And look, I think it will prove costly. I'm going to put my neck in the line. I think it will prove costly, that last point.
Yeah, I was going to ask, how concerned would you be? Because a trip to Ennis and then a trip to Limerick, two possibly extremely tough assignments for Waterford.
Yeah, I suppose. And again, look, in recent years, like Waterford have struggled probably to beat Limerick. There's no point in saying otherwise. Maybe a slightly better record against Clare, but like again, they had a kind of idea of starting you two home games, and now you're supposed you're going away from home. And even just it'd be interesting to see the severity of someone like Conor Prunty's injury, because he's an immense hurdle. Like, he was a huge addition when he came back from injury there to that Waterford team. So look, I said they're in the mixer. There's no point in saying otherwise. They're in the mixer, and again, they've do you know what I mean? They've reclaimed a lot of pride and stuff, but I still think that Limerick and Clare are a bit out ahead of both of the three teams that are chasing. And John says, look, I think they will live to regret that last point.
You mentioned James Owens, and obviously there was a bit of frustration from the Tipperary camp and Tipperary fans. Would you agree with the narrative that referees, they need more help from their officials?
I think I've been on record here before of saying, in terms of even the linesmen, that maybe how they carry out their role, because straight away, okay, we look at it from the most qualified down. Obviously, the referee is most qualified and they're doing their best, and which they continue to do. Your linesmen, obviously, I just think they can give far more impetus into the game. I know they're wired up and I know they're looking for things, but I think maybe their positioning on the field would support them. And I think, look, at inter-county level, like, there's too much riding on it. As I said, your character is riding on it. There's a huge amount of investment gone into it. And I know that referees look for the loyalty of their umpires, who will help them and do games and nobody else will do them. But even, I just think a little bit of extra support behind the goals would be a help. But just one thing, it was interesting. Like, when we talk about referees, we critique them very in kind of a straight line. We never allow them maybe the grace that a player will get, that if a player is going through a bad run of form, then we'll always give him the kind of credit and say, look, he's a top-class player. He's going through a bad run of form. And I think with James Owens is a very, very good referee, but probably just going through a little bit of poor form. And it's not something we'd ever associate with commentary around referees. And like, maybe no different to the player. He's just confidence might be a little bit shot. And I suppose, again, I don't know the questioning that referees have to face on a Monday morning or a Tuesday morning, but there are guys, pencil pushers, probably above them, that are probably critiquing them on every little thing that they do. And whilst the guy could, we've seen it in times past, like someone like Fergal Horgan, who is a top-class referee, who's left an awful void since his departure from refereeing at this level. But like, he was penalised for leaving a game flow and leaving it going to go open. And he was nitpicked for small technical things. And like, again, like, this hurling is, and I'm going to speak on hurling specifically, like, an awful lot of things are moving at a very, very fast rate. And I think you have to go with the flow of the game, and you have to have a sense of a feel about how a game is going. And in any walk of life, be it if you're a chef and you have a feel, then you don't do things to the letter of the law. And, you know, you get the results. And I think for some of these referees, they're just maybe a little bit of slack given to them, being as overly critical of them and allow their natural flow to take hold. And I think their form would return in some cases, and that you'd have a better output. But I suppose in the converse then, you see above in Blown Wexford, like Sean Stack, and again, an up-and-coming referee, but just a couple of calls that he made that he needed to consult with the guys around him. Even, like, I know I was shown there last night, the booking on Conor Cooney, like, for an exquisite piece of skill, and he was booked, and fair enough, he got it wrong, but he should have been open to somebody telling him he got it wrong. And so that's where the criticism sometimes comes at referees, that when you do make a mistake, and they're entitled to make a mistake, they should be able to maybe, I suppose, retract it. And even in James Owens' case, look, he made a mistake. He knew in that moment he made a mistake with the penalty. Just look, lads, you give you a bit of forgiveness, you know.
You mentioned Wexford match there. They were good value for their win at home to Galway. Were you surprised to see an 8-point gap between the sides?
Yeah, I suppose the nature, look, sometimes in a game like that, for Galway, maybe the heads dropped there towards the end. I know, like, even like Sir Roy O'Connor, he found huge pockets of space. So I suppose the margin of victory, I wouldn't read it as a true run of form, the margin of victory. But I suppose the fight, again, was incredible. I know my WhatsApp was lighting up with dancing at the crossroads. There was a couple of lads sending in the So they're getting ready to motor again. And I suppose the last time they would have beaten Galway was in 96. I know that ended up with an All-Ireland success against Limerick. So I definitely won't wish that on them this year. But it's I'll tell you, given, I suppose, the devastation that they'd have left behind them in Carrigan Park, like, they showed huge fight. But I suppose Galway gave them oxygen. And I know a phrase has been used in recent games about giving a team oxygen or whatever else. But like, Galway were 2 points down at half-time, not having done a whole pile to be 2 points down. Big win to come behind them, which is a massive factor every time you go down to Wexford Park. And they never kicked on. They left a minute. It was, 16-15. And then you had a goal. But so even for the goal, you'd have to credit Wexford that they just made the right decisions. They played for each other. And I know, like, Lee Chain Wrightley and Roy O'Connor today would be receiving a lot of the praise. But I'm looking at guys like Damien Rick, Matthew Hanlon, these kind of guys. Liam Ryan was back, made a huge, huge impact. But they played for each other. And I think above all else, they played for Keith Rossiter. And I suppose Keith Rossiter is the kind of guy that plays for the people of Wexford. And I suppose, like, they just, that spirit, but Galway gave them that goal, they gave them that oxygen, and look, they kind of gave up as it kind of coming down the home stretch. But I felt personally coming into that, 4 o'clock, Wexford Park on a Saturday, fine spin down from Galway. It's the kind of games you're looking from the distance saying, this is the day Galway could get caught, and they did get caught. Now, again, the collateral that they take from it, like, their form hasn't been hectic, and look, they'll need to find a little bit of that. Now, there's probably a couple of softer, what you term softer games coming up, but if they're to probably win a Leinster Championship, they'll have to look for an awful lot more. And look, Carl Mannion was the last yesterday. They still probably have guys coming back to full fitness and things like that, but they will have to look for a little bit more than what they gave Saturday.
Galway now just on 3 points after 3 games. A visit to Antrim up next before welcoming Dublin to Pearse Stadium for what could be a do or die clash. Final one for you, just broadly speaking on Leinster, 4 teams on 3 points, Antrim on 2 points. Isn't it great to see it's so competitive as we speak at the moment?
Yeah, it's really competitive. I suppose, like, Kilkenny, you would still say are the outlier, and that they're probably a good bit ahead of everyone else. Look, we've fallen into this trap here before of, like, the Leinster Championship. Obviously it's very, very competitive, and depending on what hat you have on, some people might consider it a sign that it's a weakness to say that maybe, well, you've Wexford and Dublin are after coming back into the pack, and now even Galway are back into the pack. Some people might say it's a credit to the strength of it. I suppose it'd be interesting to see how the form lines play when it comes to All-Ireland quarterfinals and that, but it makes for interesting viewing. And, like, again, what would it do for, you know, hurling if likes of Antrim were to pull through into an All-Ireland quarterfinal? I think it would give a huge shot in the arm to the Championship. So look, if nothing else, the results over the weekend have definitely kind of increased the competitiveness of this Championship, I suppose, increase the intrigue around what's going to happen. Because if a couple of results go a certain way next weekend, like, we could, last year and round 5 of both Championships, it was probably the most incredible day of Championship hurling, bar none. And the way it's going at the moment is kind of, it's setting itself up for a repeat of it. And if that's the case, then it'll be brilliant.
Oh, here's hoping. We will be previewing the rest of the round 3 fixtures later in the week. But for now, Niall Moran, thanks so much for taking the call.
Game on 2FM.
There, you're very welcome back to Game On. We're into the dying minutes in the League of Ireland Premier Division matches at the moment. Galway still leading Bowes 1-0. Waterford lead Rovers in Tala 3-1. And Sligo Rovers hold a 1-0 lead over St. Pat's. Derry City host Shelburne a little later at 7:45. And Dundalk lost to Louth Derby earlier this afternoon 2-1 in Weavers Park, the draw to United. However, we are chatting Athletics, RTÉ Sports. Katie Kirk is with us. Katie, a great weekend, a record-breaking weekend. National records were smashed as the Irish mixed 4x400-metre relay team set a new national record to finish third at the World Athletics Relays in the Bahamas. The side, like the women's 4x400 team, had sealed Olympic qualification with a stunning heat run early on Sunday morning and backed it up with another brilliant display as Ireland clocked a time of 3 minutes 11.53 seconds to finish in the bronze position behind the USA and the Netherlands. So, Olympic qualification secured. Did this just surpass all expectations?
Yeah, I think you heard on the show on Friday how positive Cahill and I both were about these teams. But I think even they surpassed my expectations. We had lots of discussion about those repechage rounds that were possibly going to throw a bit of a curveball.
Didn't need it.
Didn't even need to discuss it, Shane. They were straight through winning both their heats in both of those events, both the mixed 4x4 and the women's 4x4, and national records in both of those, which is fantastic for the team looking towards Paris.
Absolutely. You can train and plan perfectly, but just the execution was perfect. Even tactically, I saw some clips on Twitter about, I think it might have been Charlene, just letting her run around to the shoulder and then pressing on. Just everything just went to plan, it seemed.
Yeah, so with 4x4s, there definitely is a little bit more tactics than people would be aware of. Charlene Maudsley is an absolutely fantastic relay runner. I would encourage everyone to go and watch those clips. I think the one that you're talking about is whenever she's holding off the British athlete,
yeah,
and they're coming around the bend. The key at that point is to not push too hard to try and hold her off. She just held her off properly, and then as soon as she got on that home straight, blasted away to take the win.
Continuing on with our positive conversation, I saw Cathal Dennehy mention that Rashida's 48.45 was the fastest female split of the entire weekend, quicker than the reigning world 400 metre champion Paulino, quicker than the world indoor 400 metre record holder Femke Bol, quicker than the reigning Olympic 400 metre champion Seanae Miller Wiebo. So is Rashida Aleke the fastest woman on the planet at the moment?
Well, as of this weekend, yes, I think we can say that, Shane. Don't want to make too many leaps. She's still only young. She's still 21. Don't want to put too much pressure on those shoulders. But running over a second quicker than any of the other women at the weekend is definitely a massive mark to make. She is someone at this point to be feared. Of course, her individual season for the 400 metres is not quite kicked off yet. She's run a 100 metres, which was also exceptional, beating, you know, reigning world champions and medalists in that. But definitely looking towards the individual season. We'll see how she goes. But at this point, it is looking very, very good for Rashida.
Very, very good for Team Ireland as well. Like, I mean, Thomas Barr, I think he mentioned after, I was here 9 years ago in 2015, we were sixth in Heat 3 in the men's team. The women's team of Healy, Emmy Foster, Stephanie Creener and Catherine McManus were fifth. Look at what we've built on in 9 years. I'm so proud of this team. That's the big thing. Look at what we've built on. And it's not just stopping here. It's continuing on the right trajectory.
Yeah, I think that what Thomas is really referring to is the massive amount of investment from both Athletics Ireland and Sport Ireland. They've invested in these relay teams, particularly that mixed format, in the last few years. The mixed format was only introduced in 2021, or maybe it was 2020, but it was maybe not met with much enthusiasm at the time because it's something that is very new, but I'm really glad to see that Athletics Ireland and Sport Ireland have got behind that mixed team.
So, we are excited for the Europeans in Rome, and then indeed the Olympics in Paris.
Yeah, it's definitely an exciting time for athletics.
Happy days.
Europeans coming up. I'm not sure what event Rashida will focus on for that. There is a possibility that she could always run the one, the two, or the four. And when you're looking at a build-up to Paris, you don't want to run too many races in a short period of time. She's going to be under some contractual obligations to run races that are, you know, going to make her money and make her agent money. The Europeans will not be that. So potentially she'll be looking at a build-up in a different event towards Paris.
But we have the strength and depth, particularly with the relays in terms of the talent of athletes there.
Yeah, there definitely is much more strength and depth compared to that time when Thomas Barr was talking about the last time he was at the World, or the first time he was at the World Relays. It definitely is in a completely different place. But of course, when you consider that our two biggest hitters in that women's relay, Charlene and Rashida, will both be hoping to do big things in their individual events, the management really have to try and weigh up and manage their expectations, the coaches' expectations, and the different demands of everything. Because you've got the mixed relay, you've got potentially, if Charlene runs that qualifying time, like, you know, Greg Allen had tweeted about that, hopefully that's something that's coming up for her. If she does run that time, there's going to be a lot of demand on those girls during the Olympics, and it could be a very tough schedule for both of them.
Okay, great stuff. Kelly Kirk, thank you very much.
Game on.
Football.
Now we're going to finish this evening's show with football. League of Ireland Premier Division matches are ongoing. We will cross to John Kenny very, very shortly, as Shamrock Rovers still trail by 3-1 at home to Waterford. Bowes losing as well at home, and Sligo winning at home against Pats 1-0. Alan Colley, we haven't given any love to the English Premier League. It was a big weekend where Arsenal in the afternoon game defeat Bournemouth 3-0. Pressure on Manchester City. And then we discuss on Friday, this might be the second point. You never know. Wolves might, Gary O'Neill might do them. And then Steph Ford, Erling Haaland. Is this the real weekend where we kind of see, this was maybe the one match. Spurs to come, but still, this is just City completely in the driving seat.
Yeah, I'm not sure when we discuss this, Shane, are we just kind of in our own heads hoping that there's going to be a slip up somewhere, but really, do we believe it? I'm not so sure. But I did think Wolves would put up a better showing. But as you say, an emphatic victory for them, and Haaland back to his best, scoring 4. Now, the games they have coming up, to be fair, the Fulham next week, the early kickoff Saturday at 12:30. Fulham under day can be tricky opponents. Mm. And then to have the midweek game with Spurs, which on paper you'd be thinking that might be a tricky one as well away from home against Spurs. But you look at Spurs' current form and you watched them yesterday and they got absolutely hammered by Liverpool. And now the only thing where that might cause a problem for Man City is because they're in such poor form and Ange is coming under a bit of heat for probably the first time since he's taken over, that they'd be looking for a reaction in those games. So sometimes you can get to the stage of the season where you're playing teams and it's a complete dead rubber, whereas I'd look at West Ham at the moment and think they're under holidays, Moyes is leaving, a new manager's coming in, so that game for me is a victory for Man City, whereas you look at the Spurs and Fulham one, and again, do I really believe that they might stop them? I'm not so sure, but potentially they could, Shane, especially the Fulham one, I think. And I think up to now I've always thought there was going to be a twist where, I don't know, but I'm hoping there is, because I think Arsenal have been absolutely phenomenal as well, and maybe just for the good of the league and the entertainment, we probably do want a little bit of a slip up or a twist to make it a little bit dramatic, but I don't know.
And for the good of your predictions, Arsenal.
Well, we did say Arsenal, but look,
no, I agreed with you as well, to be fair. Yeah. There was a
twist.
And
the thing, phenomenal, like, I don't think anyone can criticise Arsenal
to push a team like Manchester City, like, the whole way.
And if you think of the points tally that they're going to accumulate, that would have won league titles in previous seasons, so they've been phenomenal, Arsenal, and in terms of even last year and making improvements on this year, to just go toe to toe with Man City for so long has been absolutely incredible, and to take them, they'll take them right to the wire. I think it will come down to the last game, whether that means Man City the last game that they know just the victory and it's over, or whether it means that Arsenal might be in pole position going into that last game, who knows. But hopefully for our sake, those games coming up next week, next Saturday, and then that midweek game against Spurs, we'd love to see a little bit of slip up somewhere to make it really dramatic on the final day.
In the race for the Champions League, Aston Villa certainly slipped up. How costly will that result against Brighton be?
Again, I don't think it will be, Shane, because of obviously the form that Spurs are in, and you're looking for them to capitalise and obviously try and get into that race, get into that fourth place as well. But I think Villa will have that sewn up. But Chelsea have obviously had a really strong end to the season as well. They're looking to get into Europe, overtaking Man United. But I think Villa will still hold on to that fourth place, because Spurs, even watching them yesterday, and I know I was very praiseworthy towards them in the early part of the season and the football that we're playing, but I think Postecoglou has to take a look at where it's going at the moment, because of the way they play, they're so open. And sometimes my gripe with this, Shane, is when a manager has a certain principle in how they want to play, that's all good and well, but if that principle is going pear-shaped, you have to change it.
You need to be able to manage a game.
Adapt. You can't be set in your ways that you've only one way to play, especially when you're conceding chance after chance and shots on target and at your goal. And every time Liverpool attacked yesterday, and we know Liverpool are a good team, but every time Liverpool attacked yesterday, they looked like they were going to score a goal. So at some point, the manager has to take responsibility for that and look to adapt and change up something. You can't just keep making the same mistake over and over. What's the definition of that?
That's the
definition of madness.
That is very, very, very true. You mentioned West Ham and David Moyes likely on the way out. Reports...
gone.
Sorry, it is confirmed. Breaking news, I'm told by my producer, Andrew. So Moyes is gone. Julian Lopetegui.
I'm disgusted by this, to be honest with you, Shane. I really have so much time for David Moyes. That's nothing against Lopetegui, who's a very good manager coming in, but I just think how he's been treated, and for this to play out in public the way it has in the last few weeks, and that's why I'm saying people are looking at the results the last 3 or 4 weeks, saying, oh, they're losing 5-0 and 6-0. That wouldn't be happening if David Moyes knew he was in the job. This has probably been going on in the background for the past few weeks, and the fact that he won a European trophy with them last year, where are they in the table this year? Are they 7th or 8th?
They're 9th at the moment now.
Well, that's because they've dropped down the last couple of weeks.
After the
results.
Big loss at the weekend as well.
And I don't know what West Ham owners and West Ham fans think where they should be. Moyes made the reference, obviously, the clubs above them are selling are spending billions, which they are. Like, you look at the clubs above them, Chelsea, Man United, the likes of those clubs. So I don't know where West Ham fans think they should be, but I just think how dignified he's been all throughout his career, and for him to be treated this way by West Ham... I actually think I'd love it. Now, it won't happen, and he's a professional man and a professional. I'd love him just to walk now and say, I'm not turning up for the last game.
Out the gap.
I'd love that. I would.
He's too much class, as you mentioned.
I know it won't happen, and he does have too much class, and he'll finish it out properly and professionally like he always does, but I just think the way he's been treated has been appalling.
Okay, we will be getting into the pros and cons of Julian Lopetegui with Stephen Kelly and Mark Langdon a bit more tomorrow. Champions League as well to look forward to tomorrow. However, we've 5 minutes left, Alan. Let's chat League of Ireland. So, We are into the dying embers, as I mentioned. Additional time, 98 minute in Dalyman Park, 96 minute in Talla Stadium, 98 minute in Sligo Rovers. It is still Sligo Rovers 1, St. Pat's 0, Bohemian 0, Galway United 1. And are Waterford still defeating Shamrock Rovers by 3-1? Let's find out in the company of John Kenny.
Yeah, Shamrock Rovers have missed a chance to go top. They've lost by 3-1. And you'd have to say on the balance of play, deservedly so. A cracking contest here in front of nearly 5,000 supporters. First goal came in the second minute. Dean McMenemy corner wasn't dealt with by the Rovers keeper, Leon Paulus, who appeared to drop the ball over the line. That gave the Hoops something to think about as Waterford took the lead. Rovers almost equalised moments later. Sean Kavanagh crossed Trevor Clark, put it over the bar, but the lead lasted until the eighth minute when Johnny Kenny had a shot. Blues keeper Sam Sargent saved it, but Kenny saved the loose, scored from the loose ball. On 17 minutes though, Pádraig Amann's shot blocked on the edge of the area. McMenemy hit it first time, delightfully, 30 yards out in the bottom corner. 2-1 at half-time to the Blues, and they extended that lead on 54 minutes with the goal of the game. Asamoah had a shot saved by Poulos, diving away to his left-hand side. It fell for Conor Parsons, who rifled it back via the underside of the crossbar to make it 3-1. Since then, Johnny Kenny hit the crossbar four Rovers. In fact, they hit the crossbar three times. Johnny Kenny and Danny Cleary hitting the bar three occasions for Shamrock Rovers. But you have to say, on the balance of play, this is a deserved win for the Blues, who are now celebrating with the supporters on the far side, who made some tremendous noise here during the 90 minutes. It's finished. A surprising result. Shelburne will be happy with this. It's Rovers 1, Waterford United 3. Is that right, Shane?
John Kenny, thank you very much. I can't speak on behalf of Shelburne, but perhaps...
look at him, he's delighted.
Perhaps their fans might be pleased with that. Well, Alan Colley, the neutral voice here, can Shelburne capitalise on that and press on at the top of the table and get a victory away to Derry City?
Well, this has been the question probably for the past two seasons, really, Shane, in terms of Shamrock Rovers, and when they do have their slip-ups or their slow starts to a season, can the other teams capitalise? And tonight you have two teams who'd be looking to capitalise in Derry and Shelburne, who have realistic, I suppose, ambitions to try and win a league title. They're obviously facing off each other in an hour. So it's up to them, Shane. And I think when you're being thrown chances and opportunities like this, you have to capitalise, especially if you're trying to win the league. Because Shamrock Rovers, I know they got beat tonight and that's a poor result, but they're bringing back Jack Byrne off the bench for you. The players are coming back.
And it's all kind of piecing together.
The players are coming back. Now, they have an issue with the goalkeeper. I defended him earlier on in the season when people were criticising him, but again, he's made another poor mistake. I was watching him in Dalymount. I was at the game Friday night as well. Now, they should have been two down against Bohemians on Friday night, but then the second half they were very, very good. They were all over Bohemians. They should have won. But that's a bad weekend for Shamrock Rovers. And normally over the double headers over the weekend, they're the ones who always make round on the other clubs because of the squad that they have. Huge weekend for Waterford. They won away from home on Friday against Sligo Rovers, and then they go to Talla and win again tonight. So that's massive, Shane, has bumped them up to sixth in the table. I don't know how you make sense of these results. The three teams that were playing at 5 o'clock, Shamrock Rovers are playing Waterford, Bohemians are at home to Galway, and Sligo Rovers, who haven't won in six, are at home to Pats, and the three outsiders win. So I don't know, Shane. I try and give researched homework answers, and I don't know where to even
it
go.
It just goes out the window.
Exactly.
Sligo Rovers 1, St. Pat's 0. We mentioned, I think on Friday when you and I were chatting, pressure on John Daly now.
Yeah, and it's funny because it almost seems as though there's been pressure on him since the season started, but yet they're very up and down and inconsistent, hence where they are. And even when he comes under that pressure, he bounces back with a win like the one he got on Friday night against Drogheda. But because before that they had lost two and drawn two, they hadn't won in four. Then he gets the win against Pats, or sorry, against Drogheda on Friday night, and you're thinking, can they capitalise, kick on and go down to Sligo and get a victory, and then they lose tonight? So that's a poor run of form. 1-6, that will bring him under the heat. And if you look at them, 7th in the table, 18 points, big investment into the squad there as well at Pats. I think he could be under a bit of pressure. But yet John Russell was the one that was under pressure for Sligo Rovers going into that match. They hadn't won in 6, and yet he gets the victory tonight, and that might kind of relieve a bit of pressure for him. But it's so up in the air, it's so competitive. Galway deserve a mention, 4th in the table.
Absolutely.
Go away to Dalymount and win. They've won away, I think, in Shamrock Rovers earlier in the season. The one up in Derry, that's massive for them, and it bumps them up to 4th in the table. So it's very, very competitive. I don't know what that says about the league in terms of the quality, Shane, but at the moment everybody's beating everyone and making it interesting, I suppose, for us in terms of not for the predictions, but certainly for interesting for how we're seeing the league at the moment.
Very much so. Galway and Fort, just 3 points separate Fort and eighth place with Galway and Sligo. So it is good to see the drama unfold. Just very briefly, in the First Division, Cork City 1, Wexford 1, UCD lost at home to Cove 2-1. Athlone defeated Treaty 1-0. Bray defeated Finn Harps in Bray by 1-0. And Longford had a 2-1 victory over Kerry. So can Derry or can Shelburne capitalise on the slip-ups from the other sides? We will find out later on. 7:45 kick-off for that one in the Ryan McBride Brandy. Well, for now, Alan Colley.
The bank holiday fish and chips watching the match.
That's exactly. I'll be on the road home now to catch that one. Our listeners, don't go anywhere. Betty De Silva is up next with some great music, so do stay tuned here on Bank Holiday Monday to 2FM. Game On will be back with myself and Ruby from 6 o'clock tomorrow. So from all of the Game On team, it is big thanks to Andrew and Laura Lee for working on this evening's show. Take care. Bye for now.